Welcome to No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. We promise to inspire, challenge, and make you think beyond the ordinary, reaching for a life lived for love alone. Stay tuned for the next 30 minutes and tell your friends to join us every Saturday night at 5:30 and Sunday morning at 9:30 Central Standard Time. And now, here's my husband, Bishop Randy Dean.
Welcome, everybody. Bishop Randy Dean here with you, as my wife just introduced me, and it's my pleasure, my delight, my honor to come here week in and week out, a couple times a week, and Saturdays and Sundays, to talk to you about being a no BS bishop. I'm alive to love. All lesser values, as far as I'm concerned, devolve into BS, bait and switch. So we are here doing, I'm just doing my little part in the wide world around me to unpack the beauties, mysteries, challenges, and the pilgrimage of love. The beauties of love, the mysteries, yeah, right? There's some mystery about it, right? There's challenges and certainly a pilgrimage. So when we come here every week on the No BS Bishop Alive to Love, I lead you in a couple of exercises that I find are good for my mind and soul, and I hope they're for yours as well. So, welcome once again. If you're new to this, you're about to learn something. I hope that'll change your life. And if you're an old hand around here, if you've been one of my faithful somebodies that have been in and out of here quite a bit, thank you. It's just such a privilege and an honor to think that you would give me half an hour of your life and time to do this labor, no pun intended, this labor of love. So the regular exercises that we do start with my Love's Creed. Love's Creed is something I wrote about a decade ago as a New Year's resolution, but it's become a creed for my life. It's something that I rehearse routinely to remind, put back in my mind principles that are beyond valuable. They're platinum, they're gold, they're silver, they are titanium to my living. And on that list is this creed that keeps me focused. So let me read Love's Creed to you, and then I'll ask you to repeat it after me later. I'll give it to you in short bursts like I do at a wedding altar with the nervous bride and groom. But first, let me give it to you in total, and I want you to savor it. Just take it in the best way you can. And if you'd like a copy of this, you could write me at randydeanministries@gmail.com. Be happy. I'd be delighted to send you a copy of this so you can use it as a 3x5 card or a screensaver for your computer or your phone or devices. Anyway, here it is, Love's Creed. I'm alive to love. I am not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs, locked into anything and everything that is love. I am unavailable for anything less than love. Now, there it is in total. Hope you hear the lilt in my voice as I've been saying this forever, for over a decade, and it resonates deeply with me. All right? So here we go. I'm going to give it to you as a vow, and I'll ask you to repeat after me. Here we go. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs, locked into anything and everything that is love. I am unavailable for anything less than love. Again, that just feels like just a warm blanket on a cold day when I say those words. It holds my attention, and I'm really, truthfully, I'm not BSing you. I can't. I'm the no BS bishop, but it just holds me true to my compass in life. Well, today I want to talk to you about, you know, I said earlier about we're here to unpack the beauties, the mysteries, challenges, and the pilgrimage of love. Well, in those beauties, mysteries, challenges, and the pilgrimage of love, I think it's really vital for us to hold ourselves accountable for our words, hold ourselves accountable for our vocabulary, to grow with our words and vocabulary so that we're not static or stale, but that we're energized by thinking through how we say what we say when we say it. I'm telling you something that's very true for me at 70 years of age. I know I've got to stay on top of my mental exercises. My brain's just like my legs and my arms. They get my brain and arms and legs get tired easier these days than they were when I was 17. So I have to be more determined to exercise my thoughts. And when I consider my thoughts, I have to remember my thoughts will become words and my words will become actions. So my goal in life and what I'm going to offer to you today is to join me in the pursuit of increasing the capacity of your words for holding and expressing love, making sure it's not just stale and static. I say this often, love is the only credible basis for faith and following Christ. And how do I know that? Well, Jesus said in John chapter 13, verse 35, he said, "By this all people will know." Now, full stop for just a minute. Think about that. By this, everybody, all people, Jesus isn't just being an exaggerating fool here at all. He's telling the truth because that's all he knows to do. And in the truth he tells, he says, by this, the whole world will know. Well, now it seems to me like church growth experts and evangelism experts and experts in how to reach the lost at any cost, those are mottos I've heard down through the years. It seemed to me like we'd have our ears fully unstopped and our brain ready to spring into action if the founder of our religion, Jesus, is saying, hey, this is how people are going to know, all people are going to know. It seems to me like we need to shut up, sit down, get a pencil and paper and start writing down notes. Well, and then he doesn't give you a long list of notes. He makes it really simple. And yet at the same time, that simplicity is deeply complex. By this, he said, John 13, 35, by this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love. If you have love, John 13, 35, what? There it is. Just this one secret. Here's how to grow the church. Here's how to have members in your church. Here's how to have a successful evangelistic campaign. Yeah, well, forget about all the trying to manipulate and manage and recruit people. How about just devolve everything down to one word? Love. So now by love, the whole world's supposed to be able to tell, oh, you're students of Jesus. That's the way Jesus talks. That's the way Jesus acts. And now I see you talking and acting like him. So to that end, it really seems incumbent upon all of us to be good managers of our words and our vocabulary, to express more brightly, more full of light, and kindness and beauty, forgiveness, to let our words be the carrier of love in all ways and all things, to be a flaming voice of love, voices on fire with love, that then by this light of this fire, this light of love, the world will come and say, you have been studying Jesus. Tell me more. So to that end, I'm here to give you some thoughts about making sure you have a language on fire with love. I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, so forgive me before I try, but a school principal from the Twin Cities, Mari Freistelbein, I'm saying it wrong and badly, but she put out a video, and I think it was a TED Talk, may not be, but I saw a special on television some years ago called Love Them First. This principle, I'm just going to call her Mari for short because her last name is messing up my ability to pronounce it. But Principal Mari talked about loving these students first. Now, she's in a tough neighborhood. This neighborhood she's in is a neighborhood she grew up in, and she understands that by love that she was able to grow through all the difficulties of her childhood and her family and in her neighborhood that was crime-ridden and a terrifying time for her growing up. And she discovered going through life, and she had mentors in her life who simply taught her one key principle about how to be successful in the face of all this darkness, and that is love. And in her terms, it's as a principal of a public school, she said, before I'm an administrator, before I'm a manager, before I'm a team leader, all that I want to do is love them, meaning students first and staff second, love them first. Love them first. She talked about one time she felt like she had a fire in her throat whenever she talked about love. Oh my goodness, that lights me up. That makes me want to get up off of this chair that I'm sitting on in front of a microphone. Makes me want to get up and grab the microphone and dance around the studio a little bit. I had a fire in my throat, Principal Mari said. What a beautiful expression, and what a beautiful way to express what I'm saying here about seeing to it that we're looking into our vocabulary, our language, our words, and how we're considering and communicating all the beauties, mysteries, challenges, and the pilgrimage of love. So when I am for myself right now, I'm in a preparation phase for a leadership group that I'm going to be teaching in early February, which is just a few weeks out from me right now. And the topic I've been assigned to share with these leaders is called motivational interviewing. Now, some of you out there listening have heard about this, and maybe you know more than me, and I'd be happy to have a conversation with you if you know about it in better depth than me. And then others of you may have never heard of this. But here's the essence of it. Motivational interviewing means I'm paying attention to how I communicate with my clients. So if I'm a counselor, if I'm a school principal, or in my case as a pastor, if I'm sitting down with one person at a time and I'm seeking to understand their problem, their challenges, motivational interviewing challenges me to examine carefully my words, to communicate an open door for the person I'm talking to or I'm counseling or leading, to communicate an open door for them where it's easy for them to come my way with their own words and their own solutions. Here's an example. So as a pastor, somebody calls me and says, man, my life is really upside down right now. Have you got some time we can talk? Well, then we'll set up an appointment. And I've always been committed to an appointment with anybody is usually just about an hour. Some extreme emergencies might change that, but 90% of the time, 1 hour is about all the time anybody really needs for a good counseling session. So we set up an hour. A client or parishioner comes to me and they say, oh, Pastor, My family is just sideways. There's so many things going wrong this way or that, and there's not any one thing that I can point to except just my family is just sideways. What should I do? Now here's where a loving vocabulary on my part takes hold, and in a loving vocabulary, I need to be a good motivational interviewer and ask this person that's talking to me, first, tell me what's right about your family. Give me some ideas about what you love about your family. So what I've done right there is I've opened the door for them to turn the channel just a little bit, adjust the receiver, and to say, well, I really love my children. I'm proud of my kids in school. Or they say my spouse is such a hardworking human being. They just give and give and give and something like that. So now I've attached to this client, to this parishioner, through love, an interest in what's going right. And then I might follow that up in, again, a loving, motivational interview. I might say with my words, listen, I really enjoy hearing about how things go right in your family and how your kids make you proud or your spouse is so hardworking. Tell me more. I'm interested in that. Now, I hope you get my gist here. Motivational interviewing is based in love. And love says, tell me what you love about your family. Talk to me about the positives. Oh, yeah, we'll get to how things are going sideways. But first, let's start on the basis of what you love. And then we can build from there. To that end, I've got to remember. Now, when this person comes to me, they're in duress, they're hurting, they're afraid, and confused perhaps, and maybe wildly confused. And it's my role not to tell them how bad they are, or what they've done wrong, or, oh my gosh, you said what? Oh, I can't believe you would have done that. Or to correct, or to somehow suddenly get into a teaching mode where I say, well, let me tell you the steps of how to get your family straightforward and not sideways anymore. No. My goal is to love this one person sitting in front of me with all their confusion, with all their dilemmas, with all their frustration. And in a loving, motivational interview, my goal is to hear where we can start on their own assessment of what's good. Now, so tell me what's good, what's new and good, and let's start from there. Now, what's happening there is my love prevents me from becoming critical with my words. My love stands as a guard over my voice and says, be careful now, you've got a vulnerable heart sitting in front of you. My love says, this person needs motivational, juice. Yeah, they need some juice to get up and go and go fight the fight with encouragement to keep fighting forward. They're tired, they're weary, and they don't need me to give them more assignments. What they need is my love. And my love needs to be clearly communicated in my words. And so to that end, with my words, I'm going to draw their attention to those pieces of life that are working well. And now, let's build from those points that work well. Help that client, that parishioner, to be lovingly drawn into their own communication of love back to their family. Now, I don't want to strain the illustration too much here, but my point is this, that if I'm alive to love and I'm not on this earth for hate, I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain, well then, one of the first and most primary means by which my love comes to bear in any situation is through my words. So I'm absolutely convinced that it's important for me. I'm inviting you to join me to take a good look at my vocabulary. Vocabulary, by the way, your expressed vocabulary externally starts internally. You know, we're talking to ourselves more than we talk to anybody else. And if we're talking to ourselves in negative terms, if we're talking to ourselves in brutal, unforgiving terms, and I mean unforgiving toward ourselves, well, now we're already in a bad footing for communicating forward the beauties, mysteries, challenges, and the pilgrimage of love. So when I change my internal dialogue, it's the basis upon which I can change my voice to the people that I'm seeking to love or to lead or to help, and to recognize, and going back to this study on motivational interviewing and this class that I'm going to be teaching in February, I'm convinced that 90% of any counseling is simply loving the one person sitting in front of you. So here's another part of my life is, so people will ask me about these big issues, you know, and how do you think about people doing this or doing that and how they act like that and how they act like the other? What do you think about that, about this group of people? Well, I'm very committed to cease the othering of people. So I'm not going to talk to you about all those others, all that big group of people out there, because, wow, that's a big spectrum. I'm only interested in one person sitting in front of me. And whoever they are, whatever their life, whatever their choices, whatever they've been born to be, whatever they've skipped a beat in trying to be the best that they could be, whatever they are sitting right there in front of me, this person is looking for love. They may not even be looking for my brilliant counseling, and I'm not confessing myself to be a brilliant counselor. I think I'm a good one, but nobody's coming to me for how brilliant I am for counseling. They're coming. That one person calls me, makes that one-hour appointment because they're dying for love. And it may be a specific project that they're dying to learn how to love in that project. But at the end of the day, this person simply wants to know, am I going to make it, and can you give me enough love to just keep going forward? Can you give me enough loving communication in this hour that we've got together so that I'm ready to go back out there and face the fight? I'm ready to go back out there and run the race. That's, my friend, that's how we change the world. We change the world one word at a time, one human being at a time, one life at a time. I'm not going to go out there and do great things. Mother Teresa said once, we cannot do great things, but we can do small things with great love. Pardon me, I've been having to mute my microphone a couple times here going forward. May have skipped my train of thought because my throat's a little gravelly. I apologize for that. But my point is this. A loving vocabulary is not static. A loving vocabulary grows. A loving vocabulary reaches beyond static, ordinary, stale voice. We're looking for that motivational impetus to become a person of the pilgrimage of love. So again, I'm here to unpack the beauties, mysteries, challenges, and pilgrimage of love. And to that end, I think one of the ways we do that for ourselves is examining our vocabulary, to change our vocabulary. I got to tell this story because it means so much to me. Some years ago, I was preaching and talking about treating people right and being kind, and I was talking about a waitress in a restaurant that Ginger, my wife, and I were at, and along the way I probably used the word waitress three or four times, and a sweet, one of the kindest, gentlest hearts of anybody I've ever met, and some of you may know her, Carol Morfitt. 60 years in Al-Anon. This woman just is a treasure. Anyway, she was sitting in the congregation that Sunday, and I was talking about being at this restaurant and the waitress that we were communicating with and befriending in a sense. And she cleared her throat, raised her hand, and smiled and said, "I think they prefer to be called table servers." Well, I smiled from ear to ear. I said, "Carol, I love you. Thank you for that gentle correction." And it was. It was a correction that to this day, I manage well. I don't have waiters and waitresses. I have table servers, people that are serving the table that I'm sitting at. These are human beings that want to be recognized for their service. That language changes. That's part of this point here too. Language grows, and we need to grow with the language that we're living in, not the language, "Oh, I remember we never used to say it like that." Well, let's change. Let's grow. Let's be better, not bitter. Let's be more expansive. Let our love become something that's known, like Jesus said, that by this all people will know you're my disciples, my students, because you love. And what does a student do? A student learns. A student grows. Well, that's the time I've got for today, so I've got to close in the next few minutes here, and I'm going to close with a few exercises that if you've been here before, you know what I'm going to do. And if you've never been here before, hear me out. I believe in the power and the beauty of breathing well. Yeah, I know, that's a stretch, right? When we breathe well, we live well. When we can breathe deeply and calmly, we're bringing our blood pressure down. We're bringing our attention down. We're giving our body the kind of help it needs to just keep going for another day. So I like to lead people in breathing well here on every No BS Bishop. On the count of three, I want you to take a deep breath, sit up straight, let your feet be flat on the floor, look straight ahead of you, and on the count of three, take the deepest breath you can. Draw it down into the basement of your lungs and hold it there for just a few seconds. All right? One, two, three. Inhale. And hold it. And exhale. That simple breathing exercise, if you do it three or four times or a day or maybe 5 minutes here or there, it gives your mind and your body time to regather, to recover. Maybe you've been in a lot of stress. Maybe you've been up against some challenges like the parishioner or client I talked about earlier. Life is sideways. But maybe you just need to stop and breathe and let your mind and your body just come into this unity of peace. It's a great sabbatical, even if it's just a miniature sabbatical. The second exercise I offer people here every week, and that is, again, very simple, but it ain't easy, and that is to look somebody in the eye and say the three most holy, magical, charmed words in the human language. I love you. Slow it down. Make it intentional. Make it authentic. And give somebody three words that maybe they've not heard in days, weeks, months. And sadly, there are many people who haven't heard it in years. Holy words. I love you. I've seen people's face brighten up, and I get it back now from people. Even in writing, in an email or a Facebook post, people will say, "Hey, Randy, I love you." It just makes my day. And guess what? You can make somebody's day right now or today sometime, or make it a goal to just give somebody those holy, magical words. I love you. It's poetic, isn't it? It's like a song in very short verse. All right, well, I got to go. This is Bishop Randy Dean. I've got a bit of a raspy throat here. Pardon me again for listening through my gravelly voice. But I've been tickled to be here with you and to share with you my thoughts on the beauties, mysteries of love and the pilgrimage that we're on. Now go out there and do something beautiful, because, oh, baby, ugly is getting done to death. Time to be people of genuine love.
Thank you for being with us today for this episode of No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. Be sure to join us again here next week, Saturday at 5:30 p.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. Feel free to contact us with your questions or comments at randydeanministries@gmail.com, and we welcome your financial support at paypal.me/randydeanministries. No BS Bishop is a service of WPCA Radio and Randy Dean Ministries.